Welcome to the West Harlem Way Race Podcast. I'm John Kinston, and this is episode 79. I'm recording this episode on Tuesday, the 5th of May, so the fling was about 10 days away, and from what I can gather, it's another superb race organised by John Duncan and his team. I must admit, it felt a bit sad not being involved this year, for me personally. I've ran the race 7 times, and then last year was helping marshalling at Inversnaid, but this year Katrina was running the London Marathon, so I was down in London supporting Katrina as she ran on the Sunday. But from what I gather, been reading lots of different race reports and looking at the results and sorting out the splits and the PBs, looked as though lots of people had a really, really good run. So well done to everybody. And find out a little bit more about two people in particular in this podcast. I was hoping to try and do another interview as well, but it didn't quite work out. So it's just the two today. First of all, spoke to Alan Doig last night by Skype, and we had a good chat about his training and his race, and he did really well, so you can hear about that. And then tonight, I'm interviewing Rick Williams, who we've been also following, who's aiming for his first West Harlem Way race. And looking forward to chatting to Rick, because things haven't quite worked out as he was hoping. He's picked up a little bit of an injury, and he had a great fling, but I'm not quite sure what's happening. So I'll be good to chat to Rick and see how things are going with his training. But he certainly had a great fling, so it'll be good to talk to him about that. The other one I wanted to mention was Rona, Rona McKinnon. I interviewed Rona last time, and we chatted about the fling, and she was saying she hopes to have a good run, but she wants to sort of use it and build up to the West Harlem Way. And last year she ran in 13 hours 20, and she felt, and I can't remember what she said, but I'm sure it was around about 12 and a half that she was aiming for, maybe under 13 and be happy with. But she had a stormer, and she ran 11 hours 44 and 7 seconds. So that was over 1 hour 36 minutes faster than last year. So I look forward to chatting to Rona in a few weeks and to see how that race went. You can read her race report on her blog if you want to find out more. One of the things I like to do, though, is to look at all the splits and work out people's position, their overall position, and also their split position. And I looked at Rona's, and Rona was 491st at Drimmen, the first checkpoint, and then she finished 321st. So she overtook net about 170 people. So that just shows that she was working her way through the field. But one of the really interesting things I thought was that overall, the last leg from Ben Glass to the end, she was 168th fastest. So that means she finished 321st. But that last leg, she was 168th, so it'll be good to chat to Rona, and it looks as though she's had a great race if you look at those purely those splits on their own. Anyway, so I hope you enjoy this podcast. As I say, the first interview is with Alan Doig, and then the second one with Rick Williams. Okay, it's good to have Alan Doig with us again. This is the third time that we've chatted, and we've looked at various things over the last couple of chats we've had. The last one we did was the 13th of March, Alan. So we'll try and get a bit of a catch up of how things have gone. But we're recording this on Bank Holiday Monday, this 4th of May. So have you had a day off today? Have you had a nice day?
Hi, John. Good to talk to you again. Yeah, I did have a bank holiday day off, so although it didn't feel like it, had a nice run up the Oakhills this morning, and then catching up in the garden. So it's been quite a busy day, keeping catching up on stuff after the fling and everything. Yeah. So it's been nice though.
Yep, I can see you've still got your wristband on from the fling. Is that going to stay on?
It'll come off soon, but it'll be kept. I'm going on holiday next week, so I'll probably be replaced with my all-inclusive band. So, or I'll get that on the other wrist. But yeah, no, it's nice to keep it on. Just keep sort of looking at it, and then getting little flashbacks of the day. So it's nice.
Yeah. Well, I do want to start with the fling, because last year when you ran it in 12 hours, 22 minutes and 08 seconds. And this year you finished in 10 hours, 51.09. So that's, what's that? An hour and a half faster.
Yeah.
Tell us what went right.
I suppose with last year, I would maybe say that the reason there's such a big difference is maybe because I ran last year slower, you know, a lot slower than I could have maybe. But like I said, and I think in the previous interviews, there is a momentum of my running, which, because I'm quite new into the sport, then, you know, my speed of learning and fitness and everything, I think, is ramping up quite high or quite steeply. So all the things that I've learned over a year, there's been so many things, and also learning how to train a little better, different things. Again, I covered in the last interview about speed work and hills, and just basically that, you know, we're now in about a year and a half of decent running, so I think that's just coming all together and just making me a bit of a stronger stroke. I wouldn't call myself fast, but I'm moving a little bit more rapid over the ground in terms of what I used to, and also the endurance, I think, as well, over the course of the race, I think helped me with that time, because I still felt quite, I was knackered and my quads were quite crampy and tired. But, you know, my energy levels stayed okay right up until then. So that obviously enabled me, to keep shuffling along rather than walking for a longer period. So definitely just the build up over the course of time. I wouldn't say that there's been anything, one thing that said, here's the answer to why I've suddenly become a slightly better runner.
So that was that your plan, to try and run under 11 hours? Did you set off with a particular goal in mind?
No, I had 11 hours 30 minutes in mind, and I hadn't gone to the bother of looking at splits or anything else. Up until this point, any time I've ever thought about a time on an ultra, I've never really been that far out. So again, just 11 hours 30 seemed to be quite manageable compared to last year's time. I knew I was running slightly stronger, and I just thought that would come off. The funny thing was, I forgot to start my watch straight away, and I think I was about 3 or 4 miles into it. But I'd also had a mind more to look at my heart rate. So because my mileage was a little bit out, and when I was running, it felt so complicated, like being 3 miles up, so I just really just looked at trying to keep my heart rate around about the 80% maximum heart rate, and I knew if I was going over that, I wouldn't really, I wanted to rein it in a bit. So really what I did was I ran more to heartbeat than anything else this time.
So what range were you sort of aiming for?
For
your heart rate, what range were you aiming for?
Around about the 80%. I knew that anything under 80% was really manageable for over a long period of time. And anything over 80%, I really think that I'd have probably burnt out more. So I could, obviously, in some of the tougher sections, I was going slightly over that. But then I was mindful just to, I think as well, one of the things that really was what I noticed was, if I wasn't concentrating, I looked at my watch, I noticed I was slightly over the 80 mark, and then I didn't slow down or anything, I just actually concentrated on my breathing, did a bit of diaphragm breathing, and that seemed to sort of calm me down again, and it brought it back under the 80%. So definitely concentrating.
Yeah, so 80%, what is that for you?
I'm not really sure, actually. It's been so long since I put my I think I would be, because I think I would be maximum heart rate about 175 or something, 173. So what would that be? Probably about the one, I don't know, maybe 140s or something. I would have to look. It's been that long since I put the figures into my Garmin. So I just use it as a percentage.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And did you find you were working your way through the field during the day?
Looking at my splits, I did make up places in virtually all of the sections. I think it was one of the sections where I was pretty much even, maybe probably because I was quite slow from Balmaha to Rawardennen, so maybe in that section. But later on I picked up, so I did move up the field, not drastically, so that probably meant that overall I probably paced myself quite well, and it is nice to sort of to know that that I got slightly better as I went through, as opposed to the other way, which was obviously struggling and starting to lose places. So I was really chuffed when I looked at the splits and found out. I mean, I really felt I felt really bad from Balmaha to Rawardennen. Those couple of steep hills, I was really struggling in terms of not having any strength in my legs and thinking, whoa, this is going to be a brutal. But thinking back on that, at that mileage, that probably is about the time where I would probably be sort of low on carbs and glycogen, sort of maybe going into that fat burning mode. So that's probably hitting the hills at that time is probably why I felt like that, because coming up to Ben Glass, I felt like I was flying. Probably wasn't, but it felt like it. I felt really strong. And then over past Glen Bogle, over the roller coaster again, I felt quite good. Caught up with with Graham, who I'd been running most of the race with, so it was good to catch it, So I felt like, apart from that one section, most of them I felt okay on. And again, when I did the road crossing, I knew there was only a couple of miles left, and again, it felt like I was flying, but I wasn't. I looked at my pace; it probably wasn't that great, but it did feel like I was, I was moving forward. Overtook a few people in the final bit, so and it was good to sort of go and come into by the way, sort of still being able to move quite freely.
Yeah. So obviously, as a one-off race, it was a great time. I say an hour and a half faster than last year, but in the build-up to the West Harlem Way, was it a real confidence booster for you?
Definitely. I think I really enjoy the couple of times when I did feel bad and weak and not strong, whatever. Those getting through those and feeling good again, it was quite a good process to go through, because knowing that it's going to happen in the race at some point. I don't know when it will happen, but I know that it will happen. And in a race that length, it might actually happen 2, 3, 4 times. But given that confidence to know that at some point, that cyclic phase will rise again, and I will feel good afterwards. That it's not, it doesn't have to last for the rest of the race. And that will be giving me confidence, because if it happens early on in the race, I've just got to tough it out, put the head down, and then knowing that later on I'll get my breath back again and that'll be okay later on. So yeah, definitely confidence boost in terms of even knowing that that slightly better time that I did this year, pegging that back in terms of pace will just give me even more endurance for when I have to run past Tindrum, which is obviously another world for me in terms of never having been there before.
Yeah, yeah. Well, congratulations. I think that was a great performance. And I say it'll give you a boost and a confidence as you build up to the West Harlem Way. So let's just look back on the last 5 or 6 weeks then, Alan. It's good on these updates just to get a sense of how your training's gone. So looking back over the last 5 or 6 weeks on your training programme, have things pretty well gone to plan? What have been the things which have worked well, and what's maybe something that has not been so good this time?
Well, shortly after I talked to you, I had a little race, the Lost Trails race, which was out at Falkland with the Falkland Trail Runners. And I actually, it was I remember having a brilliant race then, felt quite strong again. And I think I'd been feeling strong when I talked to you that the training was going well. And then right at the last, you know, 10 metres or something of the race, I felt a little tweak in my calf, which, you know, I was really, again, I think with the West Island Whale, my mind, any kind of tweak or anything, niggle really starts, you know, ringing alarm bells. So it actually did develop into quite a tight calf. I went and got a massage on it and, you know, took it easy. But it did knock me out of the, you know, my hilly sprint, long sort of run training week. It knocked me out. I had to take it easy. So really for about a fortnight, I really did not a lot of miles. So that really did set me back in terms of what I was planning on doing. I missed the flying training weekend, which was going to be my last decent mileage before the fling. I went to that, but I couldn't run in it. There was no way I was risking running. I did a bit of a walk jog on both days, tried it out, still felt, you know, wasn't too strong on it. So, but what happened was, just given it that week, I strengthened up, and by the next day week, I was feeling a lot better, and I went back to the West Ham Way, did 29 miles, and I felt completely shattered, really did. It was like, but I wanted to put myself into that zone, into that pain zone. Really, at 29 miles, when I got back to River Erin, I think I got that back to, I was pretty much out of my feet, but I did. That was exactly where I wanted to be. So I sort of got things back on track. And then I had the flying. And again, as we talked about that, it went well. The strange thing, though, I don't mean it probably isn't strange, but for me, because I'm not usually one for sleeping much, but this last week since we ran the flying, I've been really, really tired. And it's been quite a good thing. I didn't run for a week. Two toes that really took a bit of a hammering on the fling, and there was blisters under the toenails and really just virtually too sore to walk on, never mind run. So I did have a week off, and I went back out, did a 4 mile easy run on Friday. And still felt a little bit sluggish. But this morning's run, which was up at Muckert over the hills, I felt like I was getting back into it. So whilst my, like, that model of training plan that I had in place the last time we talked was working, well, you know, the race has sort of interrupted that, and also that slight injury has interrupted that as well. But the little niggle probably gave me a bit of time off my feet to build my strength up as well. So, you know, I've just really got to make the most of whatever gets thrown at me. So I'm hoping that that's me now back on, you know, slightly better running, where I can get more structured, back to a bit of a structure in my training again.
Yeah. Then what's the plan between now and the race? The race is just over... be 6 weeks on Saturday, won't it? So what's the plan for these last six, seven weeks?
Well, the plan is to get back to my normal training this week, but I'm actually going on holiday next week for a week to Tenerife, and the plan is to do as much running as possible, hopefully find some lumpy stuff to run up and down. So, you know, it's not just a holiday, it will be a holiday worth running in it, and then continue that plan, that sort of race, the training model that I had, with a view to the West Island training weekend, which is, I think, it's about a month or 5 weeks prior to the race. And I think I've already mentioned that, which is I plan to do a decent back-to-back that week, which would be probably a 30 on the Saturday and about a 20 on the Sunday. But the main thing I want to do on the Sunday is to recce the final part of the route from Kilmacleven or slightly nearer, all the way to Fort William, because I'm aware that forestry stuff's going to have changed since the last time I was there, and I've, you know, I have been warned to sort of like that after that length of time running, and then if it's a bit dark and there's so many things that can confuse you near the end of the race. So I think I want to have actually ran it again at least once before the race.
Yeah, that makes makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I think because you know, so hopefully you won't be in the dark, but you may be. And I think it's always good just to get your mind round those bits and know what's coming next. So that'll be good.
Yeah, I noticed. I hadn't really thought about doing that, but somebody else suggested it. And then I was doing, or when I did that run on my own, I went just coming over from Drummond over to Connacht. And again, like the Forestry Commission's obviously done some logging, and they'd piled the logs up out on either side of the path. And I mean, I think I've ran that path about 20 times, but the new logs just confused me for a little bit. I thought, you know, have I took a wrong turn in here or something? So I can just imagine on a day like that where, you know, I'm perfectly lucid, and I was confused to, well, what am I going to be like after 23, 24 hours running in the dark, and something like strange like that's happened. So again, whoever, you know, it was one of the guys that supported me, he suggested it, and I think it really is an idea to do, just in case.
Yeah, no, it'd be good. Okay, so that sounds good. Sounds like you've got some good plans in place. And I just thought it'd be helpful as well just to get your thoughts on three areas as we build up to the race. So first of all, your kit. Are you pretty well worked out exactly what you're going to wear on the race? Your shoes, your socks, your shorts and kit and rucksack, whatever?
I was. The problem I had with my feet over the last... what happened was I've got a new pair of hookers, which are slightly... they're just slightly neater on me than the previous version. So, and what I did was I did fall back into my old trusty pair for the flying. But... you know, I usually run with a pair of thin Coolmax bootliner socks and a pair of sealskin thicker socks, and that combination for some reason has been brilliant for me. I've really never had any blisters or any problems, but the two things that's happened is that, you know, the sealskin started leaking, so I've got a new pair of sealskins that are slightly different. But I did go back to my old, my old trusty hookers for the race, and you know, and my concern at the minute is that I've sort of lost that combination that really worked. I will go to my newer pair of hookers though, and they are going to, I'm really going to have to try them on that back to back weekend. So I definitely know which ones I'm going to use. I'm pretty sure it should be okay. The sock combination as well, I think I might ditch, you know, these seal skins. I've got Ninja socks which I've worn before and they seem okay, and I'll try them out on shorter runs, and then obviously the big sock test is to do them on the back to back. So the feet is probably a little bit of work in progress and, you know, to be decided, but nearly there. Yeah, I'll be using my S-Lab 5. Again, somebody recommended me not to get the S-Lab 12 because you just end up carrying more stuff that you don't really need. So I love that. I love just being able to stick my hand around the back, pull stuff in, stick stuff back in, etc. I love the soft flasks. I've tried various ones which I couldn't, you know, I hated the hard flask pressing against my chest. It was quite claustrophobic, and also I didn't like the swishing. So I love the soft flasks. And I think everybody else that knows me knows that I've got enough kit and clothing to dress everybody for the race, never mind myself. So I don't think there's much problem with that. And whether it's classed as, I don't even want to use the word posing or whatever, but definitely, it's one of the guys for the club, he's recommended it, and I already had it in my mind that I will be changing, you know, three times at least through the race. And that's just basically to freshen up, to, you know, just to give me that little bit of feeling fresh. I think we discussed that before as well, I'm sure you agreed with me as well, that's a good idea. So I think kit wise yeah, that's pretty much.
I must admit, I would tend to just change my top. I don't change waist down, because it just takes too much time. You can whip your top off, have a quick towel down. Whereas if you're going to change shorts and socks and shoes, that's it just wastes a lot of time if you're not careful.
Yeah. My fear, I really want to, you know, again, you know, whatever I do in this race, I don't think any of it will really ever be my idea, because I've talked to so many people that have done the race and done it well that there's no need for me to reinvent the wheel, you know. And I've been warned about feet, you know, feet can kill your race. So I'm of the mind that probably at most checkpoints I want to change my socks, or, you know, if I've got sock liners on as well as socks, then, you know, I want to get them off, get a bit of talc in, get a dried off, etc. And really that's more for protecting my feet for the duration of the race rather than any other sort of comfort factor. And I think that extra couple of minutes probably, you know, which might get me to the end as opposed to being in complete agony, you know, three quarters of the way through. I would say for me, who's not really, you know, time's not that great a factor for me. I think it's probably got to be worth it that I do take that extra few minutes to treat the feet.
Okay, so that's kit. Sounds like you've most of it in place. What about your support team? Is that all sorted out and organised?
Yeah, support team's pretty much in place. I've got, you know, a guy who I've ran with since I really started running, Guy for Harmony, and Gavin, and Lynn's going to help as well. One of the other guys, Scott, he had a really bad race at the thing. He ended up in the hospital and everything. So I think he's probably off the list for, I'm not sure whether he'll support or not, or definitely won't be support running. So yeah, and then I've got Ian as well, another friend who wants to, I think he really wants to see the race and you know, live kind of thing and as it happens. So he's looking to help as well. So I've got the support team and the vehicle sorted out. We've decided on pretty much different stages who's going to probably support run, and you know, and then after that I don't want to. I know that I've made that race plan, I think I showed you, etc. But there's going to be a lot of flexibility in that because, you know, the whole thing's fluid. Things are going to change. I'm going to feel different. And it was quite a good, another thing that Gavin pointed out to me, which was I'd always just had it in my mind that one support runner would be there. And then he thought, you know, and he said to me, look, if there's enough of us, you know, maybe two might go along because you just might be, you know, you really might be not very good company, or the other thing is somebody can go ahead and relay information. So these are all things, variables that can happen on the day, which I hadn't really thought about before. But now that we're getting near it, we've got the main subjects covered, so these are the little things that we're starting to think about. That it's just adding to the fun of the race, which is now it's sort of logistical as well as training.
Yep. Okay, so sounds good. And what about your nutrition? Are you pretty well sorted out on how you're going to fuel yourself for the race?
Well, I know what I will cook, and I know what I'll take, and as you quite rightly pointed out, much to my sorrow, probably my smoked sausage supper at Killock Leaving probably won't happen. I'd like it to happen. If I feel that hungry when I get to Killock Leaving, I would be well surprised and well impressed. But the food stuff that I tried it on a smaller scale to the fling, and most of it worked. I had a new find which I'd never had before, which was the little fruit pots, and you know, when it was warm, they were just amazing. To the juice in them and the fruit itself were just so easy to go down. So that's one new addition to what I'll have. But certainly the little sweet potato mash stuff and cooked sausages and just little things mixed in together and stuff, they're all going to be, they're definitely still on the menu. I am starting to get a bit more realistic about what, in terms of solids and real stuff like that, I will be able to take later on. Although in saying that, I hadn't stopped long after the flying, and I had, you know, between I had a couple of soups and I bought a wee tub of ice cream, the energy levels felt good again. So it proves that even just stopping for a little while enables you to take more solids on. And again, that's what I was planning for in the fling, which in the West Highland Way, which would be having slightly longer at checkpoints just to get that time to take the solids on, as opposed to rushing through. I've tried that before. I've tried rushing through a checkpoint, grabbing food and promising myself that I'll eat it as I'm walking, but it generally doesn't happen. I think I need to sit my butt down and, you know, take time out to eat. So, and I'm going to try and do that for as long as my body and my appetite and my digestive system will allow me, because I know that that'll push me further on into the race.
Yep. Good. Excellent. Now, I've just got two more questions just to finish with. And the first one is, when we first did this, I asked you what your target time was, and you said around about 26 hours. Now, I did a blog post up quite a few years ago where I compared people's fling time and then their West Harlem wait time.
Yeah.
And I came up with a formula of 2.19. And that was the average. So if you took, but it was hard to know whether people had raced the fling. But anyway, that was the average.
Yeah.
So if we multiply your 10:51:09 by 2.19, we get 23 hours, 46 minutes, 01 seconds. Okay. So in the light of that, are you going to be aiming for a sub 24?
Well, it's probably I don't know if doing such a good time on the fling, well, a good time for me anyway, bring is such a good thing for then putting myself under pressure for the race. But I think what had happened was, yeah, I'd said 26, and then what I did was I did an ETA at all the stops, and then I'd actually added quite a bit, and I ended up still timing it to 24 hours. Based on on what how far I thought it would deteriorate. So, 20. I think maybe I will reevaluate it and probably think that 24 hours is doable if everything goes right. And again, that's a lot of big ifs, because for such a long race, for such, you know, so many things can go wrong. Then, you know, 24 hours would say to me that pretty much if I get that, then it meant that everything went right. And if it's 25 hours, it's still a great time, and it just means that something's not been quite right on the day. So I think, you know, I think between 24 and 25 hours, I would imagine is like probably my realistic time.
Yeah.
And you never know, I might have a complete stormer and you know, and then adhere to your formula, hopefully. Yeah. That would be even more of a bonus.
Well, it sounds to me as though you should have that, because I often like to have a bronze, silver, gold. So if you have your bronze at sub 26, your silver at sub 25, and your gold at sub 24, and then
because then
you've got different things to aim for. Then, you know, and if things are going really well on the day, then I 24 hours is definitely possible. But as you say, it would have to be most things would have to go right on the day. But that's what the gold medal should be about. You know, it's aiming for that. That time, which if things do go well, and if not, you'd be happy with sub 25 and happy with sub 26, if, you know, depending on the conditions and how you feel on the day.
I think obviously the time is a good measurement, but there were so many times in the flying where I felt not just good, you know, in a good place in my head and stuff, and I was enjoying it. And I think that would I rather come in at 25 hours, having really enjoyed the race, or come in at 23 and a half hours, having completely slogged myself into the ground, then I would probably take slightly longer time and to make most of the enjoyment factor and to take time out at the checkpoints, etc. So I would say that, time's a good thing, but I think what I'm going to remember most is how I felt, my memory of it, and the enjoyment of the race. So the time will just be a number, but I think the emotions of the day and how I felt and how I enjoyed it probably are the thing that's going to last maybe forever. So that's probably what I want to concentrate on more, which is getting through in it and enjoying it as well, if possible.
Okay. Well, the final number I want from you is each time we ask on a scale of 1 to 10 where your fitness is. And the first one we did, you were a 5.
Yeah.
And then last time you were a 7.
Yeah.
So where would you say you are now?
I probably slipped back to a six. I think the niggling injury, just the disruption on training. I've not really done much speed work and everything. And well, at this precise moment where I think I'm still recovering from the flying, I'm definitely back to at least a six, maybe even a five. But knowing that I'm on the turn again, I will be able to start building up gradually again as well. So, five stroke six.
Okay, I put six down. Okay, and then hopefully we'll do one more before the race. So about two, 3 weeks before. So we'll see how you go in there. Just before you finish, I know you've just uploaded a video of your fling. So if people want to watch that, where can they find it?
It's on YouTube, and I've posted it up on the Fling website as well, so you can catch it there. Okay. It's good music, apart from that. I'm not so sure about the photography. I was hard on myself, but I remembered I was trying to run a 53-mile ultramarathon at the same time.
Yeah. Well, I did start watching it, and then I realised it was 37 minutes long, so I'll get a cup of tea or a hot chocolate, and I'll watch it later.
Yeah, I mean, this year I thought that I would include some audio of myself talking about how I was feeling, but it doesn't work because when I listen back to it, I'm just rambling and stuff. So I think just listening to it with music is probably the best idea.
Right. Okay. Well, thanks again for tonight, Alan, and we wish you all the best for the next few weeks as you continue to get back into your good training and build up to the big race in, I say, just over 6.5 weeks away. So thanks again, and we'll speak to you in a few weeks.
Okay, John, thanks for your time. Cheers.
Okay, for our second interview on this podcast, I've got Rick Williams with me on the other end of the screen. Good to see you, Rick.
And good to see you, John.
Yep, so... the last time we spoke, Rick, was on the... Well, no, we've spoken since then, and we'll talk about that. We had a good training run together in the lakes. But on the podcast, we spoke on the 13th of... The 26th of Feb. So it's quite almost 6 weeks or so away. So just to give us a little bit of a feel, I think at that point you were saying your training's going well, you were building up the miles, you were feeling confident, and you were talking about your plans for the fling. So just give us a little bit of a sense of how your trainings went for those 4 or 5 weeks leading up to the fling.
Yeah, well, I keep a record. I write down every run that I do. So I'm looking at a list here of the runs or the mileage. And the week after we spoke, I did about 80 miles. The same the week after that. I had a race the week after that. That was the Howarth Hobble. So I only did 70 miles that week. That's including the Howarth Hobble. And then 75 miles the week after, 85 the week after that, then 88, 88, and then 60 the week before the fling, and then 70 the week of the fling. And actually, apart from that week when I did 60 miles the week before the fling, you know, everything went really well, really, really well. Yep. So I was running, you know, I was running the hard sessions hard, the easy sessions easy. As you said, we did a great training run in the lakes. That was 40 miles. I did a 26-mile run, a 25-mile run. So everything went really well.
Yeah. Well, I must admit, that day that you joined us, because Dave Trowman, myself and Johnny were doing a recce run, and we were running from Dockray to Ambleside, and you read it on my blog and said, can I come down? I hadn't realized that you had to leave about 4 a.m, didn't you, to join us? Yeah. But I just thought you were so strong on that day. Every hill, you looked really strong on the way up. So we were all talking to each other and saying, that guy's going to run the fling well under 9 hours, because you just looked in great shape.
Yeah, I mean, it's strange that you say that, because I last did it 3 years ago, I think, 2012. And I did 9:43 then, and I've been. I mean, since our chat on the Lakeland run, I've been thinking, yeah, I'd like to go sub 9 hours, but I don't really see where I'm going to make up the time.
Well, so we'll come on to that.
Yeah, yeah. But so as I say, prior to the fling, I didn't have any niggles. You know, all my runs were really, really good, really good and strong. And then it seemed to fall apart the week before the fling, typically.
So what happened then?
Well, I had a bit of a tummy bug the week before the fling. So I didn't run for 2 days on the Thursday and the Friday. So I went out on the Saturday for a run. This is the Saturday before the fling. Had a really good run. Really enjoyed that. no problems at all. And then on the Sunday, I ran 8 miles and my legs were in agony. you know, they really were. Well, my right leg especially, it was really sore. And wasn't so bad when I was running. I mean, I could feel my right leg. It was sort of throbbing a bit. And there was a bit of pain in my backside and so on. But when I stopped, my leg was really throbbing around the knees and or around the, you know, around the right knee. And then I had some sort of pain in the, I say, in my backside, the gluteal region. And looking at my thing, my list, I didn't run. So that was the Sunday. I didn't run on the Monday and Tuesday to try and ease off a bit. Ran on the Wednesday, did 5 miles, and it was sore then. Again, it was sore. And when I came back that night, I did some stretching in my, you know, sort of stretches for the gluteal region. And I went out the next day and did 4 miles. And that area seemed to be okay. But now it was the bottom leg on the right, you know, the bottom of the right leg. So I did some stretches for, I think it's called the peroneal muscle, something like that. So I did some stretches for that. And it seemed to be okay, but I honestly felt that week that I wouldn't run more than 12 miles in the fling. So following on from that Sunday, when I had a really sore leg, no idea where that came from. I was running on flat ground. I didn't run particularly fast. It just seemed to come out of nowhere. you know, every single day that week, I thought, shall I even run the fling? And if I do, you know, how far will I get? And it's not a very nice experience, is it?
No, it's not. No.
You know, when you've prepared so well for a race and you just have these doubts as to whether you're even going to get to the start line. So Andrew was a marshal. So we had to go anyway, you know, whether I ran or not. But because it was a little bit better on the Friday, I thought, well, I'll run and I'll probably get as far as Drimmen and then I'll pull out and then I'll walk to Balmahar, which is where Andrea was marshalling. And then when she's finished, we'll come home. So that was really the plan because I honestly didn't think I'd finish.
Yeah.
Do you want me to talk about the fling itself?
Well, yes, because just to, not to spoil it, but you ran it in 8 hours 22:39. So it was a PB of over 1 hour 20 minutes. So it must have got okay then.
You know, I felt really strong that day. Really, really strong. And, you know, that's the unfortunate thing because of where I am now. But in a way, it would have been nice if I would have pulled out at 12 miles because following the fling, and I'll speak about this in a bit more detail shortly, but following the fling, I've not run at all apart from 2 miles last week. And my leg is sorer now than it was prior to the fling. Just some weird issues, you know. But anyway, on the day of the fling itself, you know, I didn't have a twinge at all throughout the whole race.
Wow.
And I got to Drimmen in about 1 hour 35. I think I was 61st at that point. And then I got to Rowan Denon, and I think I was about 35th. And I ran all the way up Connick Hill, felt really strong, overtook loads who were walking up Connick Hill. Ran down, you know, I really blasted it down Connick Hill and overtook loads who were coming down Connick Hill. And I was just overtaken. In fact, not one single person overtook me after, I think, 10 miles. And that's just how strong I felt. I didn't feel any twinges, no problems in my leg, no weakness at all.
Yeah,
and it just went really well.
Yeah, I must admit, Rick, I did a bit of research from the splits, and you were 61st at the first checkpoint, 32nd, 19th, and 14th. So you were working your way through the field. And also, I think it's quite interesting that you were 12th fastest for the last section from Ben Glass to the end, which is always interesting just to see whether you're sort of holding your own in your position, as it were, and you were.
Yeah.
You know, you were 14th overall, but you were 12th fastest for that last section. So you obviously had a cracking day and paced it well.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't run the first bit to Drimmen too fast, partly because, you know, I was fully expecting to pull up at any moment with a pain in my leg and just start walking. So I really had no expectations at all. And I got to Balmahar, which is where Andrea was, and I ran down the hill and I said, I think I can go on. So I did go on. You know, I always had somebody in front to aim for, you know, and I would overtake that person, you know, we'd have a quick chat, and then I'd move on and sort of overtake the next person. And it was a really enjoyable day, really enjoyed it. I was glad I did it. But looking back, I wonder whether I paid a high price, really. In a way, I wish that my leg would have, you know, been sore during the race, and I would have pulled out because, you know, as I've just said, it's sore again to the point where I'm booked in to go and see a physio next Monday to see if she can sort of pinpoint the problem, really.
Yeah, it's so difficult, isn't it, Rick? Because obviously, in hindsight, you know, it's a wonderful thing, as they say, isn't it? And you maybe wouldn't have run, but if it was actually fine on the day, it's very, very difficult to stop, isn't it? If as you say, you prepared for it well, you were looking forward to it, you were going well, and to stop at Balmahar when it wasn't hurting, it's almost impossible, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I woke up the next day and my legs were, you know, tender. My sort of quads were a bit tender. And I thought, great, you know, I've whatever problem I had last week is gone. But on the Monday, you know, the tenderness in my quads had pretty much gone. My left leg was completely fine. You know, it didn't even feel as though it just run a race. But my right leg, I was hobbling and so on. But I'd actually planned to have a week off anyway. Because what I'd planned to do was to work quite hard up to the fling, then take a week off completely, not do any running. And then I'd have 5 weeks for the West Highland Way race and then 2 weeks taper. So that was always the plan. So the fact that I had a week off wasn't an issue. So on Saturday, the Saturday that's just gone, I went for a very short run around the golf course and didn't feel any pain whatsoever. And I thought, great, you know, a week has done the trick. So I went out for 5 miles on Sunday, and 2 miles into the run, I just had to stop. My right leg was sore again. And it was even sore walking home, and where we live, you know, it's quite a small town, and there's a number of people. You know, you always see people that you know, and they're all driving past, and I was desperate for them to stop and give me a lift, but none of them did.
So, is it the same pain each time in the same place?
Yeah, I wonder whether it's all to do with my hips. About 3 months ago, I had a kind of an analysis, and the guy said that my left hip sort of drops when I run. And you could see it on the screen. You know, he showed me. What they did was they put these pads on my legs, and when I ran, there was a 3D photograph of or a 3D video of me running. And you could actually see that my left hip drops when I run. Yeah, so the guy that saw that my left hip, the left side of my hip drops, He asked me if I had any, you know, injuries or problems. I said, no, none whatsoever. He said, well, perhaps that's just how you run. He said, you know, I would just leave it for now. Now, whether that's got anything to do with it, I really don't know. But as I say, the pain that I've got is kind of in the gluteal region and in the bottom sort of outer side of my right leg. And I know that when I was doing some stretches the week before the fling, you know, it seemed to sort of help that enormously. But now I don't know. I spoke to a physio yesterday in AIR, a woman called Fiona Maxton. I don't know who she is, but she seems good. You know, she was saying that it could well be, you know, something to do with the hips. But obviously, I'll find out, hopefully, on Monday.
And is she the physio you're going to see on Monday?
Yeah. I'll go and see her. But, I mean, I don't know, you know, what the outlook is, you know, in terms of the West Highland Way race. So we'll need to wait and see.
Yeah. I suppose it's 6 weeks on Saturday, so there's still plenty of time, isn't there? You know, and you've done a lot of your, you know, the bulk of your training in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, again, I suppose I've rarely had an injury, and so you don't, you know, I don't know too much about these things, but obviously I've been looking on the internet, and like other people, you sort of Google, you know, loss of fitness and how much fitness do you lose in a week and how much do you lose in 2 weeks and that kind of thing. And I would like to think that if I can get back running within another week or so, then I've got reasonable hopes for the West Highland Way race, but we'll see.
Yeah. I do remember on that run when we ran together in the lakes. And I think you'd said to me then that because you only started running in the last 6-7 years, haven't you?
That's right.
And I think you'd said I've not had any injuries, and you know, and everything was going well. So maybe.
Yeah, and you can only. I also said to you on that run that, you know, you can only do what you think is best. And what I've tried to do all along since I started in November training for the West Highland Way race, I've tried to strike a balance between, you know, good, consistent mileage, but also, you know, backing off when I needed to.
Yeah.
But you never know, do you? You know, you never know whether you're doing too, well, I say you never know whether you're doing too much. I didn't think I was doing too much. I mean, to some people, 80-odd miles a week might sound a lot, and I'm sure it does. To other people, it might sound not that much. I mean, for me, I think that's about the right amount. And I did similar mileage to that last year and had no problems whatsoever. So I don't know. I don't know.
I do think as well, from talking with you, a lot of your miles are comfortable, aren't they? It's not as if you're hammering 80 miles a week. You know, a lot of those 80 are well within your comfort zone in some ways, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I mean, I listened to a podcast a while ago by an American guy, I forget his name, and he's written a book, and he's written a number of books, and this particular book was the 80-20 principle, percent principle, where, you know, you do 80% reasonably easy and 20% hard. Now, even before I listened to that podcast, that's the sort of the way that I was training, really. You know, 80% of my runs, even though they might be longish runs, are fairly easy, and I would say 20%, you know, are quite hard.
Okay. Right. Now, I suppose these next few questions might be difficult in the sense because you're not quite sure what's going to happen. But let's say, for example, that the physio says one more week and you'll be fine and she can give you a magic cure and you're running again within a week, okay?
Yeah.
So let's just be on the positive side for now. So if that's the case, what are your plans training-wise for, say, the last 5 weeks before the West Highland Way?
Well, so I'm not going to run at all this week. And then if I go and see her next week, and if she finds that magic button and presses it, and as you say, you know, just one more week, then that'll be 5 weeks to the fling to the West Highland Way race. Now, whether I do 2 weeks taper or not, I don't know. But I would hopefully be able to do three, you know, good weeks training. And what I might do, this isn't what I was going to do, but for those 3 weeks before I start tapering, I might do a lot of hill walking, you know, and build up some more strength in my legs, and perhaps, you know, less impact. I'm not sure really. Certainly, I'd like to try and get, you know, 3 good weeks in of good strong mileage. What I don't know is whether, you know, people talk about doing more speed work, but then, you know, when you think about it, your average pace, I mean, my average pace for the fling was 9:26, so that was my average pace for the whole race. You know, that's quite a slow pace for a run, isn't it? You know, I don't mean that disrespectfully, but, you know, for me anyway, that's quite a slow pace. So I wonder whether, you know, do you do speed work, or do you try and, you know, make your legs strong so that you can run an average pace throughout the race, and so that you can actually walk the hills strongly.
I think the whole thing about the speed work, Rick, it's not necessarily replicating the fact that you're going to run at that pace in the race. Because you're right, if you know, your fling 9:20 pace, 26 pace, that if you did a 5 mile run, that would feel awful, wouldn't it? It would feel as though you were hardly running. But the thing is, the argument goes, if you can cruise at 7 minute mile pace rather than 7.5 minute mile pace, then you can do your ultra pace at 9:26 rather than 10. So it's all relative. Yeah, yeah. So the idea is that if you've got the fitness to be able to run, I say, 7 minute mile pace cruising for 10 miles, then when you come to run the ultra, then you'll be able to last a lot longer at a slower pace.
Yeah, sorry, what I should have said was, you know, for these last sort of 3 or 4 weeks, whether I can bring that cruising speed down that much,
right?
You know, by doing speed work, and, you know, the possibility of speed work, you know, making my leg worse. So whether I'm best just concentrating on, you know, strengthening work rather than bringing my cruising speed down, because I may not be able to do that within 3 or 4 weeks.
No, I understand that. And I think the key thing for you now is to try and get to the start line as injury free, and as even if you're a bit undercooked in the sense of, you know, some of the training you wanted to do over the last 5 weeks, you're not able to do. But if you can try and get to the start line, as you say, as strong as you can, as fit as you can, as healthy as you can, then you're actually going to have a better race, aren't you? Because what you've done up to now is still going to be there. Okay, you might lose some, but the vast bulk of it is still going to be available to you. The fitness you've put in.
Is that a guarantee, John?
It is. I'm guaranteeing it. That's right. Just look into my eyes.
I'll remember that, you know, sort of 50 or 60 miles into the race, I'll think, where's that strength that John promised me that I'd have?
No, definitely. Well, I hope so anyway, because, you know, I think you're right. If you can try and just work, and if you try and do some speed work and it feels uncomfortable, then obviously back off, don't you? But I really hope that the physio is able just to pinpoint, and if she says, well, look, it might be a little bit sore, but it's not going to do any damage or whatever it is, then hopefully.
Yeah, I don't think it's like a bony problem as such. You know, I don't think it's anything like shin splints. So I'm just hoping that with a few, in fact, I did some exercises today, some hip strengthening exercises. I'm not very good at doing things like that, just because I've never done it in the past. And, you know, I never stretch either before or after. I've not done any strength sort of conditioning work, though I would have liked to have done, as I said on a previous podcast, before, at the beginning of my training for this race, I'd actually wanted to do some strength conditioning work, but I don't know, it just never seemed to happen. And perhaps, you know, had it happened, I wouldn't be where I am today, you know, in terms of having an injury. The plan was to do the Kintyre Way Ultra this weekend, you know, but I've sent an email to Rob to say that I wouldn't be there. And actually, I was really surprised and very pleased because he emailed back and said that he would defer my place till next year.
That's good.
Yeah, I mean, it's really good when, you know, when they're able to do that. I remember when I took I entered the Catron 1 year, and I wasn't able to do it that particular year. I think it was 2011. And Karen said, well, you can do it the following year. And I really appreciated that. You know, that was a great gesture. Anyway, so, yeah, we'll see how it goes on Monday.
Yeah. Just one more thing on the injury. I know, because obviously with the website, Ian sends me the people who are withdrawing from the race. And over the last few weeks, there's been a steady stream now, one or two each week, three or four each week, who are having to drop out because of injury. And I would imagine there's others in your situation. So how are you dealing with it mentally, in the sense of just trying to keep as positive as you can about where you're at and with an injury?
Well, it is very hard, isn't it? You know, it's very hard, it's very annoying, it's very frustrating. For me, partly what helps is the fact that I've always got three or four races. I've got three or four races planned. I've already booked them and entered them for after the West Highland Way race. So I've got the Lakeland 50 in July, then I'm hoping to do a couple of half marathons. And for me, it helps that I have that to look forward to. So that if I wasn't able to run the West Highland Way race, I would kind of, you know, feel, well, all right, at least I've got other races to look forward to. You know, that helps me. Not that I can easily move from one to the other. So, you know, it's not a case of, oh, well, you know, that one's out of the way, I'll move on to the Lakeland 50. And it'll still be upsetting and frustrating. But the fact that I've got some races to look forward to, you know, helps me in the event that I can't do the West Highland Way race.
Yeah. Okay. That's helpful. Okay. Again, just a few questions here. Just assuming you are doing the West Highland Way, just with your kit, are you pretty well sorted out now? Shoes, socks, kit, what are you going to carry?
Yeah, though I'm still adding to the list of things. You know, I'm still reading people's blogs and people's Facebook messages, you know, where they give tips and hints and this, that and the other. And I'm constantly adding them to my list.
Is your folder growing, is it?
It is, you know, it's a great thing. And that's where the internet is so helpful. You know, that's where the West Highland Way race Facebook page is so helpful, you know, people's blogs, people's race posts and so on. You know, loads of people that perhaps wouldn't even realize it, you know, people that may be at the back of the field, you know, they've all got something to contribute. It may just be something that helped them on the day, and that one thing may be of help not only to them but also to the people at the front. You know, not that I'm going to be at the front, but you know, things like that. So I've pretty much got my kit sorted out. And the beauty, of course, of having you know, support is that you can just throw it all in the van, and just, you know what you've got, and you can just change. And I mean, on at the Fling, I started with a short sleeve shirt and then a very lightweight rain jacket on top. And actually, it would have been nice to have changed into a kind of vest. But because, you know, you haven't got access to your support crew, I just stayed in the short sleeved shirt all the way through. But, you know, sometimes it's nice to change, isn't it? But yeah.
Okay. So kit sorted.
I think the food's sorted.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask that. I was going to come on to that one. What about support? Have you got your support team all signed up and ready?
It's all signed up and they're all raring to go. It helps that it's my wife and son. Because obviously we can discuss it, around the tea table.
And they're going to stay with you through the whole race, are they?
Yeah.
Good. And then your food, your nutrition, you're pretty well sorted with your favourites.
I think I was talking about this with Dave on the Lakeland run that we did. I think Dave was saying that, you never know what you're going to want on a 100-mile race. For example, at the Fling, I just ate, those baby smoothies that Dave had?
Oh, yeah.
From Aldi. Here's a plug for Aldi's baby smoothies. They were great. What I just did was I decanted one of those into a bottle, filled it with a bit of water, so it was probably about 250 ml, and that was all I had at each checkpoint at the on the Fling. Three or four of them. Balmahar, Rowan Denon, Invested and Ben Glass. So I had about a litre of sort of stuff, and that did me fine. I had absolutely no problems whatsoever. But that's not going to see me through the West Highland Way race. But then, I don't know what will, in a sense. I mean, I don't know what I'll fancy when I get to Glencoe or further, further on. So what I'll do is I've just got a box full of food and I'll just grab whatever I fancy. I was listening to Robert's podcast, the podcast you did with Robert.
Yeah.
That was a great podcast. I really enjoyed that. And I was telling Andrea, my wife, about the fact that he had a bacon sandwich and somebody got him an ice cream. So they know what to expect.
The pressure's on.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, that sounds good. Right, just got two final questions. The first one is, has your aim for the race changed? Now, obviously, with the injury, it might go the other way, but you talked about aiming for sub 20. And my little formula that I looked at the previous years, those who did the Fling and then also went on to do the West Highland Way and just what the correlation was. And on average, it was something like 2.19. So if you multiply your 8 hours 22 by 2.19, you end up with 18 hours 20.
Well, that's a bit fast.
I would say that for the quicker runners, it tends to be nearer 2 than 2.19. So it could be even quicker than that. Right. So if all things were good, let's be positive. Has your aim gone down from just sub 20 to sub 19? Or
yeah, I have to say, I mean, I'd said in previous podcasts that I was looking for a sub 20, and then when I ran the time that I did in the Fling, I thought, well, perhaps near a 19 and a half, would be more would be realistic. Now. Well, if I was being honest, and I said this to you in an email, I've got some doubts about whether I'd actually take part now. And I said this in the email, and I'll say it here, not wanting to disrespect the race in any way at all, or anybody else that's taking part for that matter. But my sort of plan was just to run it the once. I didn't think I'd be able to run it, more than once. That was the plan, just to run it the once this year. And I wanted to get a really good time, a good time for me. And I've invested a lot of time and a lot of effort into the training. And in a way, I don't want this to sound sort of, I don't want people to take this the wrong way, but I thought I could probably finish it. So it was more a case of, you know, how fast could I run it? And given this sort of problem with my leg, if I couldn't run it in a reasonably fast time, I don't know whether I'd want to run it at all. Now, I hope nobody thinks, you know, I hope that's not sacrilege to anybody. But, you know, I really wanted to sort of run it well. And I just question at the moment, perhaps, you know, I'm not thinking straight at the moment, but, you know, I just wonder whether at the moment, given, you know, the time that I've had off, the injury that I've had, whether I could run it that well. We'll see. I mean, I would really like to run it, partly for Andrea's sake, because she, you know, she's really excited about the thought of supporting it. And, you know, and a large part of me thinks that, okay, I may not be able to get the time that I want, and I may not be able to race it as fast as I wanted to, but, you know, I can still take part in what is a great race. I can still, you know, chat to other people on the way. I can have a sort of fairly relaxing time, possibly because I won't be running as hard as I thought I would be. Perhaps walk more. So we'll see. I mean, I would like to think that I can get as near to 20 as possible now.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it's still, you know, still 6 weeks away. So hopefully things will get sorted out and you'll be on that start line going for your sub 19. That's what I hope for you.
Well,
otherwise, let's wait and see, you know, because you can't really speculate at this point because, you know, you just don't know. But I fully understand where you're coming from. You know,
I think what it does do is it sort of knocks your confidence. And I know that had I had the sort of training that I'd planned, I would have ended up on the start line of that race. If you would have said to me, look, you know, you can run hopefully sub 19, I probably would have believed that. I would have had the confidence in my training to believe what you were telling me. But now the thing is, you know, I probably wouldn't have that confidence. I may still be able to run that fast, and I may still be able to get that time, but I wouldn't have the confidence, you know, that I could do that. And it would be a case of, well, if it happens on the day, it happens. But I just wouldn't know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we will speak again in a few weeks, and hopefully it'll be a more positive sort of interview. And for you, you know, and things are going well. But
yeah.
If not, we'll deal with that, and we'll chat about that as well. Because I say there's other people in your situation who have picked up an injury or are working through things. So it doesn't always go to plan, does it?
No.
Okay, so the final question is on your scale of 1 to 10, oof, where you're at. So you started at 6 and then you went to 7. So where are you now?
The week before the fling, before I had this sort of problem with my right leg, as I say, I'd had 4 or 5 weeks of 80-odd miles a week, felt really strong. I was probably an 8 or a 9 even. I don't know how much fitness I've lost in the last 2 weeks, but I feel like I'm down at 4 or 5. I'm probably not, but I feel like that. You know, I feel a bit fat. I feel as though my legs are, you know, I've suddenly lost all their fitness. I just don't feel like a runner at the moment. But so four or five.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Well, let's hope that it picks up again, I say, before the race. Well, thanks so much for being so honest tonight, Rick. I know it's not been easy because, I say, these things do knock you. So, we wish you all the best, and we hope that you get on well on Monday at your physio, and she can find the magic little button to press and get you back running quickly and pick up that fitness.
If she finds that magic button, I'll pay her three times what she asks for.
Great. Okay.
Thanks, John.
Yeah. Thanks, Rick.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed this latest West Highland Way Race podcast and finding out a little bit more from Alan and from Rick and about how their training and preparation for the race is going. There'll be another podcast in another couple of weeks, and hopefully I'll have another main interview as well. So I hope you've enjoyed this episode, and if you're out running, I hope you're having a good day. Hopefully the weather's a bit better. May has been a bit mixed, hasn't it, so far? There's been some lovely days, but there's been also some very wet and miserable days. But I hope if you're out, you're having a nice day and enjoying being out on the trails. Just going to finish with another quote from Wombat Fitness, and this one is from Gail Devers, the American sprinter, and she said this: keep your dreams alive. Understand, to achieve anything requires faith and belief in yourself, vision, hard work, determination and dedication. Remember, all things are possible for those who believe.